चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। नमो ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन्निति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। अ वेरी वार्म गुड इवनिंग टू ऑल ऑफ यू फ्रॉम एक्सियन लैब्स। I believe you are spread out throughout the globe in different leadership and managerial capacities in this company. I am very happy to be with all of you this evening to speak on this interesting topic of spirituality in business. There may be some who may not think that this is a topic of any relevance. Those who are not inclined towards a spiritual way of life may doubt or deny the very necessity of even speaking or thinking about such a topic. But actually, spirituality is more relevant today than ever before, because everything has become so materialistic now, and it has gone so extreme in the direction of being materialistic that it is definitely bound to have some deleterious consequences on the state of the world in general and on individuals and their state of mind in particular. So of course, when we speak of business, we'll come to spirituality at the end, but when we come to when we speak of business, we are speaking of economic activity, and specifically that kind of economic activity that generates wealth. And business generates wealth by identifying needs in society and then fulfilling them by providing some basic services or goods. And in the process of doing that, it generates livelihoods as well, and also provides facility for people to engage their abilities, their intelligence and so on in productive engagement or activity. So fundamentally then, the purpose of economic activity via business is to create wealth. And this is such an integral part of human society that one cannot imagine human society without any form of business activity or any economic activity. Even if we speak of spirituality, still there is a need for economic activity. So whether one is spiritual or not spiritual, there is a great need and a necessity for some form of economics, some form of business activity. It cannot be avoided. So now that we recognize that the process of generating wealth is an essential ingredient of human society, then we must ask ourselves, you know, what is the best way we can do that? What is a way that is most wholesome, most harmonious, most productive, most beneficial to the world at large? And there are many stakeholders in the whole process. It's not only the people who are actually doing the business or in that company or firm, But there are consumers, the customers, there are suppliers, there are various other stakeholders involved in the process. And everybody is actually affected. Even those who are directly not affected, who are not consumers of the company, are also affected, because they are affected by the overall atmosphere that is created by the impact that that business has on the society. I'll quote one example which I cite very often. One of our devotees who is the CEO of a very large textile company was mentioning many years ago that in the course of some business get together, he met the vice president or the head of marketing for some company, cereals manufacturing company. And this person was the overall marketing head for the whole of South Asia and East Asia, a lot of regions basically. And she was telling this devotee that, you know, our goal by promoting our products is to change the food habits of people in South Asia and in India. We don't want them to cook now. We want them to eat our products, ready-made products, whether it is cornflakes or whether it is whatever it may be. Now, on the face of it, from a purely marketing and strategic, corporate strategic point of view, it may seem like something that is quite justified, something that is normal to do. But when you really think about it deeply, what is this business meddling in? This business is meddling, this particular business I mean, is meddling in the very culture and lifestyle of people and aiming to transform that in such a way that it will become irreversible almost. It is striking at the very roots of the socio-cultural foundations of society. They're introducing through their products and through the propaganda driven by the advertising machinery, etc., at the roots of how people live, how people think. So in effect, what you're saying is henceforth there'll be no cooking because you don't need to cook. Imagine what kind of transformation that will do in your family structure, in the social structure. And of course, the topic of today is not about social transformations, but I'm giving you an example to show how even a person who is not a consumer of that cornflakes or something will eventually get affected, because as more and more people start subscribing to that point of view, to that lifestyle, to that cultural worldview, then what happens? Everybody starts getting swept into it in the process. So what happens? The company has succeeded. They have succeeded in doing what millennia, what has been going on for millennia, for thousands and thousands of years. And then we have to ask ourselves the consequences in terms of health. When you don't eat freshly cooked food, which is hot, how does that affect your health? Then we have to ask what it does for the family unit. Does it in any way help the family to stay together as a unit? Or will that foster in some way the dissipation of the family unit? So there are multiple questions that arise. So therefore, the point is that in the search for corporate success, in the search for profits and increasing their sales volumes and their sales shares in the market, etc., do the companies have to think about the social, cultural, religious, spiritual consequences of their actions on the society? So in other words, simply doing business for the sake of doing business and getting a lot of money should not be the driving force for businesses, especially in the modern era when we pride ourselves on being broad-minded and liberal in this world. As far as management theory is concerned, long ago, even in the 50s, Peter Drucker has spoken about profit as not being the only motive for business. So in management theory, this has been around for a long time, for more than 70, 75 years, that even though people do business for profit as a primary motive, but it should not be the only motive. And as we move along, we have seen in the world overall a lot of resistance coming up, an upheaval of protest at various types of corporate activities that have seemed to be being environmentally very destructive or socially very destructive. And so the media has come up, various activist groups come up. Why? Because we see a certain corporatization or a certain type of economic or business activity that seems to be going overboard. It is going awry. So in that pursuit of wealth, which is not tempered by something sober, by a spirituality of some kind, it becomes very destructive in its nature. So therefore, whilst pursuit of wealth is not in and of itself bad, per se, pursuit of wealth is necessary in the society. It can be wholesome, it can be productive and beneficial for society. But if that pursuit of wealth is not seen within the framework of a larger ethical, moral and spiritual boundary, then it will become very harmful for everybody. Unbridled pursuit of wealth will create many problems for society. Actually, we see that. You see people who have earned a lot of money very quickly. How many generations does that wealth last? I do not know if any sociologists or economists have studied this. It's an interesting topic to study. How long does wealth last with anybody? And what consequences does that wealth have on people who inherit it? And what kind of people are able to make productive and wholesome use of that wealth which they have inherited? It is only those who live by certain very ethical, moral and spiritual standards that they will be able to preserve their wealth. And that goes for corporations also. What goes for individuals also pertains to businesses. So therefore, when we speak of spirituality, what exactly are we speaking about? Now, I will come to the specific point towards the end of my talk, but I want to now focus on the what is commonly understood to be the opposite of spirituality. When we speak of spiritual, then we automatically speak of material. So then the word comes up, materialistic. Now I'm sure we're all familiar with the word materialistic. So what does it connote? When we say that such and such person is very materialistic, what do we mean? In very common understanding, what we mean is that that person is excessively preoccupied with material possessions, with wealth, with enjoyment of this world, with trying to acquire prestige and name and fame and position in the society and so on. So such a person we generally understand to be materialistic. So one doesn't become materialistic simply by pursuing wealth. The important thing is the excessive stress, the excessive preoccupation with this, the kind of philosophy of life or the mentality that makes the person feel that the sign of success is just getting more and more and more of these things. That if I can get more and more money limitlessly, then I am successful and I want more and more. It's an unquenchable thirst for more. So the materialistic mentality then spawns a set of values and goals that are based upon these factors that I mentioned above, like blindly pursuing acquisition of wealth, acquisition of material assets, trying to enjoy more and more, and so on. So therefore, it is very easy to identify somebody who is materialistic. Typically, however, it's useful to just take a look at what profile, a psychological or behavioral profile, somebody who is very materialistic may have. And the reason I'm speaking about this is because eventually I want to contrast it with the spiritual approach. Because if you're not spiritual, then by default we will become materialistic. And even if we are not currently materialistic, we will get swept along with the flow of materialism if we don't have the anchor of spiritualism with us, and we will also become materialistic just like everybody else. For example, the person gets into the educational stream, a small child, gets up, becomes a teenager, and now is bombarded with the propaganda, then gets into the usual rat race in the process of earning money, and is told you have to be number one, you have to do this, you have to earn money. And even if that person is not really of that mindset, that person becomes so by the kind of atmosphere that he or she is placed into. So let's talk about some of the symptoms by which we can understand somebody who is very materialistic. Now, typically, such a person would be one who is prone to acting in ways that are selfish, exploitative, unethical, and unjust towards not only people but also towards the environment. So this, I would say, is the first symptom of a person who is overly materialistic. And eventually, now, even though we're talking of individuals, very logically it can also be transposed onto businesses, because ultimately businesses are also run by individuals, by people. So this is the first characteristic feature of somebody who is very materialistic. Following this first point, it is easy to see that a person who is prone to these tendencies will also be prone to breaking the law. Because then that person would like to fulfill his or her objectives any which way, by hook or by crook, mostly by crook. So that is also the tendency. Another feature that will come up is that because such a person considers the acquisition of material wealth and material assets as something very desirable in life and as a standard of happiness and success, therefore that person will consume more and more and more. So therefore, collectively, what does this translate into? It translates into a consumption-based economy, a consumerist economy, where the idea is ye dil mange more, we just want more and more and more, and we are not satiated with whatever we have. And we are dazzled and bewildered by the constantly increasing array of all the new gadgets that come up and all the new fashions that come up and all the new goods that are put before us. So we succumb to that. So the consumerist economy, where excessive consumption is the foundation for a growing economy, that is a sign of a materialistic society, where we do not think of an economic system that is not based upon ever-increasing consumption. It is simply an unsustainable form of economics, where you want your GDP to grow from 5%, 7%, 9%, 10%, 20%. You just want to keep on growing and growing and growing your economy. It is impossible. it is not sustainable. So the idea of the consumerist economy is something that cannot sustain, and also leads to a lot of heartburn, leads to a lot of unwholesomeness in the society at various levels. So anyway, this is the third characteristic of someone who's very materialistic. The next characteristic I would say is that there is a very excessive emphasis on debt. We borrow. Now, as we all know, modern corporations are based upon borrowings, right? And so also it happens in the individual realm. So individuals, they take heavy loans, and most people today spend the rest of their lives basically paying off mortgages. And in India, we see the very pathetic situation, very unfortunate, tragic situation of farmers committing suicides because they have taken so much of loans, they're so much in debt that they are not able to pay back even the interest, what to speak of the principal amount. So in very large numbers, farmers commit suicide. So, you know, the materialistic economy will trap everybody in the debt cycle. Okay, the next symptom is that materialistic people will have a lower quality of interpersonal relationships. Because of the nature of their psychology, you know, they cannot deal properly with others. They cannot have functional, you know, smooth relationships with others. And therefore, the next point, which is that they cannot be at peace with themselves and with others. They tend to get overwhelmed by the negativities like greed, anger, frustration, hatred, rivalry, ego, jealousy, and so on. So these negativities are natural companions to the materialistic frame of mind. Yes? So now whatever I have said for the materialistic individual, now apply it to the materialistic corporation. Now keep in mind that a corporation is there to generate wealth. So we are not saying, I repeat, that pursuit of wealth per se is bad. But when that pursuit of wealth is done in a certain way, with this excessively materialistic mentality, then you end up with a scenario that can be very harmful for the whole world. So then the question arises, that is it possible for us to do business without being excessively materialistic? Indeed, it is possible to do that. But at the same time, an important point to mention here is that spirituality is not merely the negation of materialistic tendencies. And I'll come to this point a little later. But let's start with at least the idea that we negate these material tendencies and we prepare the ground for something even higher, which is spirituality. But at the very least, the negation of these negative tendencies is essential. So, really the question that arises is, what is the motivation for our earning wealth? Why do we want to earn more and more money? Then the next question is, how do we go about earning that money in our business? And next, how do we spend the money that we have earned from our business? So these are three important questions that will come. I repeat that. What is the motivation for us to do our business? What is driving us? Number two, how do we earn that money? And third, how do we spend what we have earned? And how do we react if we don't get what we desire? If we get a loss instead of a profit, what is our reaction? What do we do? How do we behave? How do we think? Yes? So therefore, now I will take help of some concepts from the Bhagavad Gita, which is one of the most ideal and perfect textbooks of spirituality for us. I'll define spirituality in a few moments. So in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks about three modes of nature: the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance. In Sanskrit, it's called sattva-guna, rajoguna, and tamoguna. Now, these three qualities are all pervasive in this world. They characterize every conceivable thing, event, place, and person in this world. Whatever you look at in life, you can characterize it according to these three modes. You can characterize, for example, places according to these three modes. For example, a liquor bar is in the mode of ignorance. A place where people are running hither and thither to earn money is in the mode of passion. A place which is calm and peaceful is in the mode of goodness. The early morning hours are in the mode of goodness. The daytime is in the mode of passion. Night is in the mode of ignorance. Even entertainment, for example. Entertainment or music that is soothing, melodious, calming to the mind, uplifting to the spirit, purifying to the heart, is music in the mode of goodness. Music that is very passionate that makes us want to dance and do all of that, jumping in the discotheque all night long or something like that, yes, which is very, shall we say, that facilitates material enjoyment. That is music in the mode of passion. And music in the mode of ignorance is that which is neither melodious, nor purifying, nor joy-giving, but it's simply noise. Some people will still call it music, but others who are more discerning in nature will call it noise. So in any case, everything and anything in this world can be understood in terms of these three modes of nature. So let's try to relate the concept of the three modes of material nature to business. Yes? So let's talk about the question of how we earn the money and how we spend it. And then at the end, I'll come to the idea of why we want to earn it. So when the money is earned by virtuous means, by virtuous I mean that which is honest, that which does not cause pain to others, which is noble, so that kind of wealth is called sattvic wealth, wealth that is earned in the mode of goodness. Wealth that is earned by selfish and aggressive means is wealth that is earned in the mode of passion. Wealth that is earned by cruelty, by cheating, by deception, etc., is wealth in the mode of ignorance. That is called tamasic. So sattvic wealth, rajasic wealth, tamasic wealth. Goodness, passion, ignorance. Of course, the manner of earning money also has karmic consequences. If I earn money by cheating, by cruelty, then that will have its karmic consequences on me as an individual and me as a corporation or me as an entity, as a collective entity. So therefore, the manner in which we earn our livelihood or we earn wealth will have a very significant bearing on our life as an individual or as a collective entity like a company or a business. Then let's talk about how the money is spent. If the money is spent for purposes of peace and happiness for oneself and for others, we say it is sattvic or in the mode of goodness. If we earn the money for egoistic purposes of simply increasing our personal enjoyment and prestige and name and fame and so on, and we are not really concerned so much about others, then that is wealth, again, in the mode of passion. And then money that is spent simply for doing harm to others, for evil purposes, to spread chaos, confusion, negativity, to denounce God and spiritual ways of living, that is spending wealth in the mode of ignorance. So even in a company, we do these things. You earn money in a certain way. You earn wealth. And then you disburse your wealth also in a certain way. Yes? So either you may disburse your wealth by sharing it with your employees and other stakeholders. You may do some activities for the welfare of the society. Nowadays in India at least, and I don't know if it, I am sure it exists in other countries as well, you have what is called a corporate social responsibility. So every company is supposed to, by law, spend a certain percentage of its earnings on certain predefined social causes. So the idea is that companies also have a choice about how they will spend their money once they have earned it. So how they earn the money and how they spend the money. So these will describe or define where we stand as an individual or as a business, whether we are in one mode or the second or the third. Now, we come to the question of motivation. Why do we want to earn this wealth? If my motivation in earning wealth is merely for purposes of increasing my prestige and enjoying wealth and so on and so forth, then that motivation is in the mode of passion. If my motivation is that I want to do it because I want to earn a decent livelihood, I want to look after my family, and then I want to use my surplus wealth after living a simple lifestyle for the benefit of the world at large, then such a motivation is in the mode of goodness. It's sattvic. However, if my motivation is that I want to earn this money so that I can destroy, I can spread negativity all around, then that form of business is, that motivation is in the mode of ignorance. So we've spoken about these three factors. What is the motivation behind the business or the creation of wealth? What is the manner in which we are creating the wealth? And how do we spend the wealth? So now, I want to come to a level higher than sattva, higher than the mode of goodness. At the very least, when we speak of business, one should try to be in the mode of goodness. But the title of our talk today is Spirituality in Business, not Goodness in Business. So at the very least, one has to be in the mode of goodness, and one has to try to come beyond that on the platform of spirituality. So what exactly is this word spirituality? Now, there could be various definitions. The World Health Organization will also have its own definition, and everybody may have different definitions. But if one really understands the Bhagavad Gita properly, then one can understand that in the process of spirituality, there are certain items of knowledge that need to be understood. Number one, one has to understand what is one's true identity, one's spiritual identity. Second, one has to understand what is life's ultimate goal. Is simply making money and enjoying life the goal of life? And then I die at the end of it, and then I leave behind whatever I've earned for somebody else. And is that it? Is that all there is to life? That I work hard all my life trying to earn a lot of money, and then I try to enjoy with that money as much as I can, and then it's all over? Is that it? So spirituality pushes us to inquire deeper and higher. Who am I that wants to enjoy? What is it ultimately that I want in my life? I have met many people who are very successful materially. In their younger days, perhaps, they were driven by great ambition and passion. And now that they've earned all that they wanted to, they've, as you say, been there, done it, been there, done that, they're very, very successful now, the question arises, what next? Where do we go from here? Now, then they realize, yes, I must now use it for something. They go to a higher level and they understand, I must use this wealth for something good. I am not satisfied. I am still restless in my mind. I have this money and it is not giving me happiness. So therefore we find that very wealthy people in the world, many times, they become philanthropists. They become altruists. They try to do something for the society. But still the question remains, even though giving back to the society in terms of, helping whatever different projects that we may take up, economic projects, social development projects, etc., is all very well. But still that doesn't answer the question of what the ultimate goal of our life is. And ultimately, what kind of practices do we have to do to attain that ultimate goal? So therefore, I will define spirituality as being a state or a process of understanding and acting according to one's true identity as the eternal soul, beyond the material body, the mind, and the intelligence, and eventually of experiencing the blissful results of such actions. So this is how I have defined spirituality based on the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita, we are told that we are not this material body that we see in front of us in the mirror or in the screen. This is only like a vehicle. Our real identity is, according to the Bhagavad Gita, that we are the Atma, we are the eternal soul. The soul has no birth, no death. It is eternally existing. It is full of knowledge and full of bliss. So the reason we seek happiness is because by nature, spiritually, we are happy. But because we do not know our true identity as the spirit soul, and we think ourselves to be the material body, so we seek happiness and gratification on the platform of the body. And that is always a futile endeavor. It will always be in vain. Because according to Bhagavad Gita, the material body can never give us true happiness. So therefore, when we understand our true identity as the eternal soul, we are spiritual beings by nature. We have nothing to do with this material world. Then we ask the next question, what next? Okay, so I am an individual who is eternal, and what does that mean for me? What do I need to do? Well, we need to realize that identity by spiritual practices. So assuming theoretically that I perform some practices by which I get experience of my spiritual nature, then what happens? What next? Then Bhagavad Gita says that we must understand where we come from, where we originate. And just like we are the soul, there is that supreme soul. That supreme soul is our origin. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that he is that origin. So when we connect to that supreme soul in a process of love, of devotion, that is called yoga. And specifically it is called bhakti yoga. Yoga means to connect, yuj. And connecting with our source, with our origin, by the practice of certain spiritual recommendations, then we actually become yogis. To become a yogi, one doesn't have to go to the forest or the Himalayas. One doesn't have to renounce one's family or one's business or the society at large. By being a yogi means that one has understood one's eternal spiritual identity. One has understood that one has originated from one's spiritual source, and one is actively engaged in the process of reconnecting with that source by adopting certain spiritual practices like chanting spiritual mantras, the names of God and so on. So by doing that, one actually becomes spiritual in one's consciousness. And as one moves further in the in this consciousness, one actually transforms one's way of thinking. One's whole mentality, one's approach to life changes. And whether one is a student, or one is a business person, or whether one is a sports person, or anything that one may be, the underlying consciousness and mentality is the important part. So with a spiritual bent of mind, one can be a sportsman, one can be a businessman, one can be a politician, one can be anything in this world. But if one does not have that spiritual bent of mind, then one will automatically by default become materialistic sooner or later. So with this spiritual bent of mind, when one comes into the field of business, then one will not only be sattvic or in the mode of goodness, but one will actually go beyond that. One will now start seeing one's activities as a divine calling in life. One will see that as being something that is being done for a higher purpose. Yes, the fact that I have to maintain my family and earn some money, that's all right. But the underlying mentality is that there is a higher purpose behind it. And then therefore, the process of earning the money also has to be in accordance with that. So there's no question of doing business in a way that is exploitative, that is unethical, that is destructive, that is harmful for others and for the environment. And also when it comes to spending money, then one will try to utilize that money for the general good of society, and specifically for activities that will help oneself and others develop this spiritual consciousness. Because ultimately the true welfare and true well-being and happiness of the world lies in developing this spiritual consciousness. That should be the real business of our life, actually. Otherwise, the commercial or economic business that we do, that is a detail. So this is in brief the subject of how we can the idea of spirituality in business. So at the very least, we negate the materialistic ways of thinking and functioning, and then we go a step beyond that. We come to the spiritual platform of trying to understand our eternal identity in relation to our spiritual source. We perform practices in accordance with that, And then we do our business with this very pure divine mentality. And then everything becomes blissful, everything becomes happy. A kind of a divine atmosphere can be created at the workplace also, if one does that. But it is a constant struggle. It is an effort that will require deep application of mind and energy, and it requires proper regular guidance. Then automatically we see the transformation that will happen in society, whether it is in business or in politics or in anywhere in social life or domestic life. So, all right, I will stop here. I think I have gone beyond my time. Yes, I think so, yeah. It's exactly 45 minutes since I started, I think. So I will stop here. Thank you very much. If we have time for questions, I am open.
Amazing presentation. Thank you for guiding us so well, very succinctly presented in simple words. While I understand we are over time, but I'm just becoming a little greedy here, given that we have your presence. And typically we kind of close, but given that you're with us, I would like to grab this opportunity and see if anyone has any, we can take one question. Kinesh, is that okay? We can take one or two
questions. Yeah, absolutely. I do have a question, if I may ask, Guruji. But before, I think, again, really, really helpful, very lucid, very simple language. I think you've given us an amazing framework to really evaluate ourselves, how we make money, why we make money, how we make money, and how we spend our money. And I think the four levels of nature, including spirituality, just an amazing framework, and thank you for sharing. We all at Axion, I think our leaders know we have a purposeful business. That means we're doing innovation, and innovation is improving lives. So we see that just amazing connection. But I think we certainly did not have this framework in mind. So really appreciate that. The question I have is, just like you could be a materialistic to a certain level, like 1 to 10, on a scale of 1 to 10, do you see that spirituality also could be level of 0 to 10, in the sense that some organizations are far more spiritual and hence they're more connected versus others? And at some point in time, I know today might not be the time, but would love to hear your thoughts in a separate session, possibly on how do you evaluate your spiritual level as an organization?
So I'll be brief, Kinesh. Just as individuals can be understood or analyzed, so also with corporations or businesses, because after all, as I mentioned earlier, businesses are made up of people too. And just as an individual has a certain personal culture, so do organizations. We've heard this term very often, organizational culture. So that indicates the values that the organization stands for. And the leaders in the organization are the ones who set the standard, who create that culture. So it's essentially dependent on the leadership. If the leaders are going to be of a certain spiritual bent of mind, then they will endeavor to create a certain appropriate, a suitable culture within the organization. And we see that even in business in general, there are some people who are known to be, you know, who are well known today to have very ethical cultures. You know, they are very highly regarded. Some business houses are regarded because of what they stand for. And some business houses are known to be, you know, a little lax when it comes to the ethics, and perhaps they're well known to resort to unethical means. So they create that culture. It is the leaders that create the culture. So depending on how closely these values are aligned to spiritual principles, one can also grade organizations in terms of their spirituality.
Great, thank you. One of the things we will do is an internal introspection to see where do we fall, you know, on that spirituality index. But thank you for that.
Thank you, Kinesh.
So, Kinesh, I also want to welcome Rajiv and Sanjeev, right? Because this is the first time they have joined our leadership session here. So, I want to actually welcome and thank them also, given that they have been great source of inspiration for some of us, right, directly, and others indirectly. So, I want to welcome them as well.
Well, I just want to say, I know a lot of our leaders are new to Axion and probably haven't been part of the full journey, but Rajiv has been an inspiration to building Axion. And I always say that 30 minutes with Rajiv is more valuable than 30 hours of McKinsey's advice. So I have been very indebted to him for inspiring Axion in the early years. And even today, he's been advising us. So, and of course, Sanjeev has been part of that journey. For him, any number of hours invested in Axion was less. So he's put in an incredible number of hours when Axion was in initial early stages. So again, just the ecosystem and this connection with Swamiji and everything that they bring to the table. And right from the day one, Rajiv has inspired us to be spiritual. We're very thankful that we are in the coalition of these leaders, Shyam, yourself also included. So, thank you.
Actually, Kineji, as Maharaj was speaking, I was actually thinking about you, and I was thinking that how your spiritual culture has influenced the company in a big way.
So, well, after listening to this, I feel like I'm on a scale of 1 to 10, 6 actually. So, we need to do some introspection for sure. But I think the framework has been very helpful.
Kinesh, if you could offer a thank you note to Maharaj and then we can close.
No, again, thank you. Thank you, Maharaj, for very valuable teachings here. We wish we get another session with you sometime soon in future, because this subject is a much deeper subject than what we could cover in 45 minutes, and I know we didn't give you enough time. So thank you so much.
Thank you all very much, and my best wishes to all of you, and I do hope that you're all well and safe. Thank you, and best wishes. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone.